Hello, and you're very welcome to a podcast all about the Irish League. My name is Peter Cinnamond, and in a week where the league began to look like its normal self again, this pod can finally return to its tried and tested formation. Six games reviewed at the top, news taking over the middle, and a further preview of the next round of top flight matches right at the back. It's all frills, it's all action, and I bet your granddad hates it. The Swifts put their giant steel-mating chops to the test against Linfield over the weekend as the Blues came to town and one of them saw red. Cliftonville, Carrick and Crusaders all got their season underway, as Newry would prefer if we pretended they did the same and we just forgot about whatever happened against Loughall last week. And could Coleraine be the next club to get sugar daddied? Jimmy Nesbitt hasn't struck oil in his back garden just yet, but money men are sniffing around the Ballycastle Road Club, and crunch meetings this week could decide the next step. So lock yourself in, as we've got all that and more coming up on this week's Kicking Match. All 12 teams have played this weekend in the NFL Premiership, which means every single team is finally on the board. Nothing is too early to do at this stage of the season, I'd say, be it panic, celebrate, lose the run of yourself, or even start calling for wholesale changes. Whatever mad emotion may be pulsating through your veins right now, hopefully we can channel it through this podcast as we review all of the big stories in the Irish League happening both on and off the pitch this week. For example, my guest this time round is a man who I feel is getting rather excited about what his club is doing both on and off the rather glistening green carpet. Joining me is writer and sports editor of the Coleraine Chronicle. Hello, Damien Mullen.
Good evening, Peter. How are you?
I'm good. It's nice to have you back, sir. First question out the traps. Would you be lying if you said that you were more excited before the season started compared to how you're feeling now? I'm sure you're feeling very smug and happy, perched atop of the Irish League tree.
I know. Can we just quit the season now? I know it's only two games.
Stop the count.
I think we've all seen enough, haven't we, really? But do you know what, Peter? That's a good question, because I think there was a genuine level of excitement around the club even before a ball had been kicked. And I think, like any club, you know, we all support our various clubs and we all like to see new players coming in and new faces around the place. And to be fair to Oran and the chairman and the club who have backed him in the summer transfer window, I make it five new arrivals in the summer. And it really all kicked off, I suppose, early in the summer with the signing of David McDade. And David McDade was a player that spent, I think, 6 months at Coleraine 10 years ago. And even at that time, we all knew he was a good player. Unfortunately, he left and went to Cliftonville at that time and went various other teams in the interim. But he's back. He's only 32. So, you know, he's got a lot of miles left. But that was a statement signing as far as, I suppose, Coleraine were concerned. Last year, we had Matthew Shevlin pretty much, you know, toiling away up front on his own. And it's to his credit that he scored so many goals and finished the year as the leading goal scorer. But to go back to what you were saying, so we signed David McDade, then Graham Kelly, then we had Jake Wallace, a young local guy that is from here. He was at Fleetwood and suffered a horrendous time with injuries and it really stalled his career. So then he came back looking good pre-season, local guy, as I say. Graham Kelly at the back. Then we also then go and sign an exciting young talent, Lee Harkin. So when you look at it, before a ball's been kicked, given what we already have in the squad and those arrivals coming in, I think there was a genuine sense of excitement around the place. Then first game of the season, home to Ballymena, under the lights on a Friday night, first game of the league season for any of the clubs, any of the teams. Great game to start. You win it 2-1, you're up and running first day, and then at the weekend there, we went to Loughall, difficult place to go, got a second win. So yeah, I mean, I suppose the initial pre-season excitement is kind of being matched by the start, but as any football fan, manager, player will tell you, Peter, it's the old cliche, one game at a time, and not getting carried away, and all the rest of that nonsense. So That's the party line, and that's the one I'll be sticking to as well. Two games in, I don't think there's no, the old thing is there are no trophies handed out in August, so we'll just hold fire for a little while yet.
Well, you've got to be there to stay there, but there's plenty of teams who will be chasing your tail. This is a people's podcast, Damien. And earlier on today, before we recorded this, I put it out to everybody else. What game are we going to start this podcast with? And they voted with their feet, or they voted with their retweets, or whatever we're calling it next right now. We're going to go to two teams who have also played two games, two teams that would be considered in the traditional top six. And in many ways, they're not exactly up there with you because they've had somewhat rocky starts to the season themselves. That being Glentoran and Larne. Both came into Friday's big clash at the Oval off the back of completely polar opposite late surges in their opening weekend. Glentoran snatching a trio of points at the death against Glenavon. Larne throwing two away like it was confetti at a wedding, which meant Friday's clash would be a significant tone setter for both teams' early start to the season. Larne were the team who arguably needed to win more, and they did just that. 2-1 at finish to the visitors. Tanner Lynch said his team looked more Larne-like after the game. Do you agree, after watching it for what is now 90, 100 minutes, however long these Irish League games go now?
Even at this early stage of the season, and it's ridiculous to say it, Peter, it's only two games in, but there was a bit riding on that game for both teams, given, as you say, how both teams had started, and particularly, I think, in the case of Larne. I mean, could you imagine the scenario where your defending champions, Larne, quite possibly potentially lost their opening two league games? You just don't feel your season is up and running until you get that first win and that first 3 points. And for a team, for example, like Larne, if they hadn't have got the win against Glentoran, I wouldn't say a lot of pressure, but there, you know, the little bit of nerves, a little bit of anxiety comes into the situation. And the longer that goes on, the harder it is then to get the win. So I have to say that's a big result for Larne. And I get where Tiernan's coming from as well, because potentially maybe that first game that they played, unless you're in the camp, you don't know, but maybe there was an element of complacency or whatever else in the camp. And maybe the loss on the opening day really sort of focused minds, if you like. And as Tiernan says, it was a more Larne-like performance. And we all seen them last year, and we know what they're capable of and what they are all about. They're a very, very good team. Difficult team to play against, a physical team, strong in all departments. And I think now that they've got that first win under their belts, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with again this season.
It was a really strange game because when these two teams face off against each other, in many ways, at least what history has shown us, is they somewhat cancel each other out. And it was this strange tactical battle where neither team, particularly early, wanted to make a mistake, which is ironic because both of Larne's goals somewhat come from mistakes. The first one, Micheál Glynn, he is just not hassled enough. He's not closed down enough. He gets a bit of space. Look, he still has to give off a massive ripper with his left foot to beat Aaron McCary, but he's given the space to do that. And then the second goal comes from Andy Ryan. And what's interesting about the two teams is with Larne, they rely so much, particularly on lead bonuses off the ball work. Larne really work their strikers. Their wide men, which are in many ways wing backs, are quite deep. They build from deep, and they can go from one end of the pitch to the other very quickly. Exactly the way that Andy Ryan goal was. He capitalizes on a mistake, uses pace, takes it around the keeper then, and is able to take on a 2-0 lead. And at that point, Larne is thinking, please not again, hold on, because they put themselves in such a great position. It was a brilliant position because Glentoran had knocked on the door. There was a goal for Aidan Wilson, which was chalked off for offside, which I haven't seen an angle which tells me one way or the other what it was. Watching it live, looked close because it didn't look particularly like miles offside. And I think if Glentoran had got that goal, it would have went very differently because for me, Glentoran tried to be more condensed. They were not particularly fast from defence to attack. And in many ways, they held the ball a lot deeper. Larne tried to bring the ball higher up when they're passing it around that final third. It felt as though any attacks that came from Glentoran were very quick and they were few and far between. It's like if they held the ball, it wasn't high up the pitch. Fod Sule was always going to be a central character in this game, and I thought Lorne did the business in somewhat restricting his influence on the game. As we talked about earlier on, how Lorne threw it away against Dungannon with 10 minutes to go, that 80-minute mark, which could be that anti-Fergie time for them this season, Bobby Burns latches on to a deft little header from Shane McCartan. Wonderful volley hits. And all of a sudden you're thinking, not again if you're an Alarm fan. But for Glentoran, they weren't able to push on. They weren't able to get the goal. And you said it. It was a difficult, tight, tactical battle. And it was a fight oftentimes in the middle of a pitch. This is not winning the war. It's definitely winning the battle. But what a battle this is, both in table position and in mentality. Because if Lorne was sitting there at 1 point, and both Glentoran and Coleraine have got 6, they're behind the eight ball.
I haven't seen much of Glentoran. I've heard different reports about them. Obviously, left it late against Glenavon, 90-whatever minutes we're into now, these days in this new world of football that we're in. So they got that win 1-0. And then first game at the Oval under Warren Feeney's managerial reign, and they lose. I haven't seen enough of them, Peter, but would I be right in thinking that they haven't really gelled? They haven't had liftoff insofar as their season is concerned yet, that there's maybe, and I know it's difficult, it's a new manager and a new maybe set of players, and it will take time, but football fans are an unforgiving lot, aren't they? And there was a little bit of, I suppose, uncertainty in some quarters about Warren Feeney's appointment. I mean, do you see at some point where he comes under pressure if performances and results don't improve?
It's strange because this doesn't really feel like his team. If you took what you would think the Macquarie team to be and you have what Feeney's team is, you don't look at them and go, oh wow, there's a lot of different ideas, or there's lots of different, like, visibly that you see. Clearly there's a big, massive hole. It's called Conor McMenamin, which Warren Feeney's trying to fill. If I look at that Glentoran team and the squad, the best way I can describe it, it's like one of those little puzzles that has these little Tetris-style shapes, and you throw them onto the ground, and you try and fit them into this square, and you're thinking, they have to fit in somewhere. It looks right. It looks like there's big pieces that should fit together, but you keep finding like, oh, this doesn't work here, that's a bit jagged edge, there's one or two bricks there. It feels like there's lots of good players. You have McGinn, you have Junior, who scored a lot of goals at the tail end of last season, you have Jed Donnelly, who scored a huge amount of goals over the past 2 seasons, albeit last season wasn't exactly, look, he scored plenty of goals last season, but it wasn't one of his banner years. And I think in many ways this team has been able to fit a lot of square pegs, not in a particularly round holes, but they've somehow fitted them all together. They've tried to find a formation, and I compare them to Coleraine because I tweeted on Friday night looking at the game going, oh, maybe Glentoran do have a striker problem, because they're a team that seems to have a lot of goals from lots of area of the pitch, and they have Jed Donnelly and Junior, but outside of that they don't have the same standard. I think losing Perkis is actually a blow to their depth, and clearly rumours are they're looking to fill that in. But if they are to change it up, and if they are to try and, rather than losing what you have with McMenamin, somehow change the shape and stick 3 at the back, whatever it is, 5 in the middle and 2, it's just going to be awkward, because if you stick 2 at the top, you don't have anybody else to come in bar Jordan Jenkins, who isn't really proven at the top level of the league. So right now, I think you're trying to play in a similar way that they did last season, but Daryl Connor is a different player to McMenamin. And I just look at Lorne and I see how they have very effective players in key positions. Having Cian Bolger back, that's a big centre half doing the business. And there's been lots of changes. Aidan Wilson, Luke McCullough's come back in. That midfield is finding itself with Sule, Burns, and McCartan, striker, midfielder, whatever it is. And I think that's why they've been short on goals. It's why they're huffing and puffing against Glenavon. It's why they just struggled to fire it into the net in Europe. And perhaps once they start scoring, they won't stop. But to compare them to Coleraine, where they have so many attacking players, and it feels to me what Oren's decision has been is that, what if we just played all of them? And somehow, it's kind of working. And we'll transition actually to that game on Friday night, the other Friday game, where Corin go down to Lakeview Park, lock all, get a brilliant win against Newry. The tails are up thinking, let's go. We'll have a go at Corin. And boy, did they ever right out of the traps getting that early goal. But Corin took their breath. They put their head up. And they just said, we're going to play into the wind. We're going to play our style and the goals will come. And they did. Were you surprised the first game of the season against Ballymena seeing Glacken, McKendry, Scott, McDade and Shevlin all in the pitch at exactly the same time? And no Lynch? Like, has this been brewing? Has this been concocting for a while?
To be honest with you, was I surprised? I would answer you no, Peter. I mean, what is it to say, you know, attack is the best form of defence, if you like. If you have those players and you know potentially you've got match winners in each one of those players that you mentioned, my argument would be to you, why wouldn't you use them? Why wouldn't you play them? You know, he has got other guys now sitting on the bench that probably can come in as well. But there was a very telling comment that the manager, Oran Kearney, made following that win over Ballymena. I mean, that opening night, there was a crowd of, I think, 3,500, you know, packed into the showgrounds, which was a tremendous crowd for a first game of the season, and they were thoroughly entertained. And that was the comment that Oran made after the game. He goes, you know, yes, we want to win, but we also want to put bums on seats. He says, we want people to be entertained. We want people to come and to enjoy watching this team. And that gives you, I think, a little bit of a glimpse or an insight into his thinking as well, that, you know, yes, it's okay going out and winning games, but he has at his disposal some really exciting players. You mentioned them. Conor McKendry was unplayable against Ballymena that night. Andy Scott on the other side wasn't far behind him. Jamie Glacken, we all know what he's capable of doing. Influential player on the team. Shevlin, McDade. You know, and I think over the course of last season and into the summer and the pre-season games as well, I think the guys have worked out a way, a system. They're all happy playing together. And I think that's the key thing to it, that they all know how to play together and like playing together. Now, there obviously are going to be games and days when it's maybe not going to work. It's maybe going to go horribly wrong in some respects. But at the moment, you know, you've got 2 wins out of 2. Obviously, they can still play better. But I think Oran has to be commended in some respects because he wants his team to entertain supporters and neutrals into the bargain as well. And I think that has to be commended in this day and age. Well, you mentioned it in your sort of reflections on the Glentoran-Larne game where it was a bit of a chess game and that it was a tactical affair. And that's good in its own right as well. But as fans, we like to see attacking football. We like to see chances. We like to see wing play. We like to see efforts and goal and goals. And so far, it appears to be working. But what is important as well is you have to keep them out at the other end. And that's the important part as well. It's okay going forward, playing nice football. But you've got to keep the back door closed as well. And I guess the addition of Graham Kelly in there goes some way towards that as well. But yeah, so far so good. And they're good to watch, Peter. You know, I watch them most weeks and it's not a bad thing, is it, when you go to watch a team and they're good to watch.
A word for Andrew Mitchell. I must say I had somewhat in my head placed him to the side that either his time at Coleraine was going to come to an end or he's going to get moved on or perhaps football wasn't going to be for him anymore after all the injuries and setbacks he's had even before his time joining Coleraine. But he starts on Friday night, he gets a goal in the 25th minute. you can't add another great striker to this team out of nowhere. Like, he, if he's back fighting, not only is he a great striker, but he adds another type of player at that top end of the pitch to have. That strength, that bullying mentality, that's a real weapon that you have coming out of the armory.
I know, again, it's like a new signing. It's a guy that has been out of the scene for so long. He has worked diligently so hard to try to get himself back to full fitness. He had been working away on his own last season. He's been working on his own. He was coming up from his home down in Mid-Ulster up to the Corian Showgrounds over the summer when no other players were there, just to keep working and trying to get fit. He hasn't missed a clip in pre-season. And I think everybody was willing Andrew Mitchell to score for Corian as soon as possible, because he's a lovely guy to boot as well. As all the things you mentioned, he's a great player and he's a big, strong physical presence. But he's a lovely guy, and he has had the most horrendous time with injuries. And I think you could see by his goal celebration at Loughall on Friday, I suppose, just kind of what it meant to him. Because, and he admitted himself after the game that there were times and he thought that would never happen again for him. Like you, he, in his darkest days, maybe thought that he was finished with football. It was all over. He was never going to play at this level again. So for him to start on Friday and then to repay his manager's faith with the goal, which turned out, I suppose, to be the winning goal in many respects, everybody at the club is delighted for him. And if, you know, that's the first, he's got the taste for it now. If he is fit, and he will get fitter, and he has scored already, as you say, what an addition. You know, you've got him, Shevlin, McDade, McCrudden, and all the rest of the guys that we've already talked about. So, yeah, I mean, it's exciting, but on the most human, personal level, just delighted for Andrew himself as a person. It's great to see.
Tell me about this Loughall juggernaut, which they are to start the season. A win against Newry, taking a lead 2 minutes in against Coleraine at home. They must have been in dreamland. They don't get any points. But what did you see live and in person? What did you think about them? Because from afar, I see a team who play with no fear, but also have a bit of nous about them, which I haven't seen from teams near the bottom of the league over recent seasons, I must admit.
The thing I think that impressed upon me most was just their pace and their effervescence, if you like. And I guess that's going to come with your first home game in the top flight for some 16 years. You know, there's that adrenaline buzz, there's the whole excitement around it, the hype around it. So that will rub off on the players. But full of pace, full of running, some really good, tricky attacking players. They will give any team, they're full of it, down at Lakeview Park over the season. Maybe as the season goes on and we get into the sort of November, December, January time, maybe things will sort of be a little bit more difficult for Loughall, because by Premiership standards, they just maybe don't have the same depth of squad, quality of squad. Really, really give Corian their fill of it. Corian were like really having to defend in the second half. Maybe a draw would have been a fair result, but I guess Corian's game management experience it's gained over how many years under Orne sort of saw them through. I think maybe one thing that would concern me, if like from watching Loughall, and if I was involved in the Loughall camp, maybe just missing a striker. You know, we've talked there just about Corian and having a plethora of strikers. And I'm just wondering, Loughall, do they have a person that's going to score 10, 15 league goals in the season, which for teams is vital if you want to do anything at all? I might be wrong. I might be proved wrong. It probably will be. It's happened before. I just wonder, you know, but then, you know, the window's still open. There are a number of players still out there that may be looking for a club. So who knows? But on a first sighting of Loughall since they've come up, I think, as you said, they play with no fear, full of pace, And I think their attitude is, we're up here and we're going to give it a right good go.
I think you're right. These are nice early flashes, but there's 36 more games that they have to keep this up for. And perhaps one of these players, no doubtedly actually one of these players, are going to have to step up for them if they're going to secure safety across the season. But a player who really stood up, stepped up to the mark for his team, was Joel Cooper down at Stangmore Park. The Blues go down to Dungannon and face against last week's headline team, a team who was able to take on one of the league's best squads. And they really gave another good account of themselves again. But Linfield were able to show that they have the skill and the players to just push this result out. It does somewhat come through Joel Cooper. He's the man that provides the cross for the opening McKee goal. And then from there, Linfield tried to dictate the pace. They were frustrated by Dungannon. And what impressed me about Dungannon once again was their ability to impose themselves on the game. They're not there just to give away niggly tackles and cynical fouls. They are there to physically battle in the middle of the park. They made Linfield panic. They made Linfield make mistakes. That Dylan free kick is a wonderful piece of skill, but that is earned through hard work in the middle of the park, where the Linfield player had to bring down the Dungannon player as he rushed on to goal. Even though Linfield take the lead, keep applying the pressure, Dungannon look cool, they look assured, and then they get that goal once again from Ben Gallagher, stepping up to get the goal after a little bit of skill in the box. And once again, it's a top team panicking with the last few minutes of the game. And I thought Linfield lost a bit of their poise at times in this game. Daniel Finlayson gets sent off. I thought it was very, very light for that second yellow card. Bodies off, but they were under the cosh, and Dungannon didn't panic themselves. They kept applying the pressure, and they know, at least they've built themselves up for these first two games against Larne and against Linfield to counter swiftly. And they were able to get a draw against Larne. They weren't able to get anything against Linfield. They are impressive for sure, but they will have a lot of questions moving forward, because they're not going to be able to have as much space. I don't think teams like Loughall or Newry or Glenavon are going to push as many forward as the likes of Linfield did. But look, this is a Linfield side who really wanted to build up confidence, who wanted to get their season running, their motor firing. They could have done without the drama. They could have done without conceding goals. They could have done without getting a man sent off. But they get out of County Tyrone with the 3 points, and I think that's all that really matters to David Healy at this stage of the season.
I think it is. I mean, I was at that particular game as well, and similar almost in many respects to the Loughall Corian match the previous evening, where Dungannon really gave Linfield their fill of it, and particularly in the first half. I mean, if you had wandered in off the street, for example, and you were watching the two teams, you would have been hard placed to say which was the sort of your perennial league winners and the perennial sort of relegation scrappers, if you like. So from that point of view, very, very competitive, particularly in the first half. Linfield, obviously, through the class of like Joel Cooper, Kurt Miller, they have that in their locker. They were able then to get a bit of a sort of a buffer zone. But credit to Dungannon, similar to Monday night against Larne, they never say die spirit came back. And David Healy was a very relieved manager by the end of it. Glad, as you say, just to get out of Stangmore with full 3 points. But chatting to Rodney McAree, we mentioned him earlier there in reference to Glentoran, but he's obviously back now at Dungannon, his spiritual home, if you like. And chatting to him afterwards, and I did ask him just the way that Dungannon had played and taken the game to Linfield, etc. And he did concede that, yes, that, you know, there has been a kind of a switch in mindset down at Dungannon since he's taken over. You know, he's not prepared just to sort of play a game or to lose or to throw away silly goals or to capitulate to teams, if you like. You know, there is that switching mindset, and you can tell, you know, that he believes that the team and the group of players that he has is more than capable of giving anybody else a game, and they've proven that. You know, it doesn't come much more difficult your first two games against Larne and Linfield, and to perform admirably in both and to almost get a result in both definitely shows signs that perhaps Dungannon may fare better than what they have done in the past couple of years. Time will tell, obviously, but, you know, the early signs are definitely encouraging, Peter.
They're the team which I've seen the biggest difference between from last season to this season. Partly it's due to personnel, an experienced player like Dylan. You bring in Hegarty into the back, you change up formations, but Macquarie's fingerprints are all over this team, and you're right in everything you said there. They aren't willing to roll over. They didn't look as scared or as completely daunted by this big team like Linfield coming in, who threw players at them with abandon. And look, I think there's plenty of things which Linfield need to clear up. This conceding goals thing, as much as Dungannon earned those goals, Linfield in previous seasons, I feel like we've seen it over and over and over again, are coming into Stanmore Park and rolling over the Swifts and not blinking. Meanwhile, they were made to sweat in many ways because of the goals that they conceded. Yes, this is a better Dungannon side than what we've seen. I know it's only two games, what we've seen in seasons past, but it's not exactly a team who themselves are free-flowing, and many ways a lot of Linfield fans have been calling and thinking, well, this is a team that's somewhat stitched together, there'll be a few more further additions. But according to Healy, that isn't going to happen. He's talking about a situation where he's at the peak of his budget. I think that's surprising to hear for Blues fans, and probably fans across the league.
I was at the game. Linfield fans sitting in a close proximity to me in conversation, and they were the ones that were more or less saying defensively they felt that was Linfield's weakest point. And that's them saying it. They watch Linfield week in, week out all the time. I don't get to see them. But I guess what it does do is reinforces your point, which you've just said, where you feel Linfield are maybe a little bit suspect is at the back. And if you're wanting to go and to win a league, your first priority in any league-winning team has to be a defence. You know, attacks win you games, defences win you leagues. That's the old maxim. And if there is a question mark over Linfield's defence, they will get found out. And it doesn't bode well if you're looking at the second week of the season and some fans are slightly concerned about their defence. It's not really the healthiest of positions for a team of Linfield's stature, is it?
It's not. But look, they're is a team that they've brought in a couple of players in different areas of the pitch. Maybe they need to find their own position. Maybe they just need to get that confidence back, that Linfield swagger, which we must admit, even if we're looking at previous seasons, it's not like Linfield are the best team in September anyway. They usually take their time to get going. It's Linfield fans should be more worried if they aren't kicking on in January, because that's the time they usually do. And this is a team that came second last season and in many ways were one or two results away. So look, they've got firepower up top now with McKee, the addition of Fitzpatrick, who needs to get himself off the mark. So this is the one team who I just haven't. I can see the blueprints. I just can't see exactly how it's going to come together.
No, I think what you say is very, very important. They have brought in 3-4 very important signings, and it will take them time. I think on Saturday, I think there was just one of the new summer signings actually started. The other three, I think, were on the bench, Fitzpatrick, Robertson, and I can't remember the other one. Fitzpatrick, I think, maybe carrying a knock, maybe not. But I think it's going to take time just to try, as you say, find out players' best positions, best system, and everything else. And traditionally, you hit the nail on the head, Peter. You know, nobody at Linfield is going to be too concerned last week of August where they're sitting in the league table. January, February, March, that's moving time, and they'll be there, no doubt about it. And if things aren't going well, Linfield will move in the transfer market in January, buy whatever and get the additions in that they need to push on. So, you know, never, never, ever write Linfield off. That's one thing I've learned over my years in the Irish League.
Well, another team who, from the outside point of view, looked like a work in progress, looked like a team that had a lot of question marks over them, was Cliftonville. I think there was a big magnifying glass on this game. Jim Magilton's first game in charge. It's at home. He takes on a Glenavon team who were a thorn in the side of many a top six side last season. They've been short on signings, but they weren't short on goals. So much changes, so much stays the same. Joe the goal, once again the main man, taking care of business against Glenavon. This game was over before it really got started. And Jim Magilton was sitting there like a Cheshire cat, the happiest man in Belfast. He was relieved, and I think this is a victory where now I can say I've won my first game, we're off and running. Now I can kind of get going proper, because this was going to be, this is going to be a monkey on his back until he got it. He's got it now, and it was well earned, well deserved. I don't think any other team looked like they should have won this bar clip and fill on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Jim will be forgiven for thinking this management lark's easy, you know. I mean, it's like, as you said, the game was over after about half an hour. I mean, it was just like Glenavon didn't put up much of a resistance by the look of things. Joe Gormley did what he does best. And as you say, it's probably a very important win for Cliftonville, because there was a lot of noise going on in the background whenever Jim Magilton was appointed manager and a couple of players perhaps maybe left or whatever. And there was, and this win just quietens everything down again, doesn't it? You know, Joe Gormley scoring twice, three goals, 3 points. All of a sudden, all that noise just kind of dulls down a little bit and allows the players and Jim concentrate, get on to their next game. And you know what? Given the squad that they have at Solitude, you know, there's not a lot of talk about them, but they could be dark horses, Peter, couldn't they, really, when you think what he has at his disposal?
As a man who predicted them to finish seventh two podcasts ago, I don't think I can turn that 18-wheeler of a prediction just yet. But that's a great way to prove doubters, which obviously I will be considered to be included in that batch, to prove them all wrong. I don't want my gimmick this season to be the one that poo-poos Cliftonville or is negative about Cliftonville. That is not the case at all. I'm going to tell you so many great things about Cliftonville I saw in that game. You've still got one of the most confident and prolific attackers this league has ever seen in Joe Gormley, and he's clearly doing Joe Gormley things in the way that we've seen for absolutely ages. Sean Stewart, even early days, looks like a very able replacement for Levi Ives, at least going forward. He didn't really have to face a lot with his back to goal, but going forward, he took his goal really, really well and looked to love it. I have many questions about him kissing the badge, whatever it is, within the first half of your first game for Cliftonville, but maybe he's a lifelong Cliftonville fan, I don't know, but that felt like a faux pas, let's just say, in regards to old school football logic. Chris Lowe was magnificent as well. Ben Wilson looks like a player, but the question is going to be for me moving forward, can they do it against the bigger teams, and will that leaky defence, and my goodness, was it leaky at the end of the season, Damien? It was a leaky defence that hasn't added bodies and has lost experienced players, the likes of Coates and Ives. So look, the defence has got to prove it to everybody. Attacking was never an issue there. And of course, they're down a certain Mr. Hale as well. So look, they have issues. And they went against a team in Glenavon. That must have been an incredibly hard watch if you are a fan of Glenavon, because they were the architects of their own destruction and then some. These were simple long balls which they didn't deal with. They lost way too many one-on-one battles. Gary Hamilton just spent mainly the first half just constantly trying to change it, constantly trying to fix it, tinker it, go from four, go to three, add a striker. And this is a team which we would have always looked upon as one with a lot of experienced heads. And you look at it now and you see, particularly as you progress up the pitch, the experience isn't there. And with experience, I think you get consistency. You get the ability to deal with different situations. They were not able to deal with that situation. And the fabled late surge of Glenavon just wasn't there. They are very thin up front. I know Guy Hamilton has been talking about, he's been looking for strikers since January. But they're going to have to do something, or this could be a very difficult long season. They have some really great players, Brown and goals. We all know what Peter Campbell can do. Jack Malone is probably one of the more underrated midfielders in the league. And Danny Wallace has had many solid days as well. But you look at it man for man, it's inexperienced. And perhaps it's just lacking in a bit of quality.
I'm just looking at the league table, and Peter, it doesn't make for great reading for Glenavon supporters. They have had a bit of a wretched start to the new season, to be fair. Going there to Cliftonville and being 3-0 down almost in the blink of an eye, that doesn't bode well for the rest of the season. Although, having said that, you can rest assured that Glenavon will always get a result against Corian. So I'll just put that out there now, because
that'll be the litmus test for Corian. Are they the real deal? Everything go down to Mournview and cause a bit of problems. But that's what's so interesting about game week one to game week two, which is where you don't want to get too caught up on a team doing badly or a team doing well, because at least I kind of thought Glenavon stood resolute against Glentoran, who have all these great players, and if it wasn't for a last ditch bit of skill from Shane McCartan to find Jed Donnelly, it would have been a great 0-0 and same old Gary keeps finding these players out of nowhere and Tiernan Mumvella and all the rest. I could just see all those seams that knitted together this team just fray and fall apart. You know, you're not in a good position if you're sticking on a player after 29 minutes. You know, a striker to try and chase the game. And Fitzpatrick was always going to be a difficult player to fill the void of. And look, I don't know how deals are done, but when you see Dungannon losing Dara McBrien to Linfield, and one of the ways they soften that blow was to get a player like Devine up top, you're thinking, you know, that was a big bartering, very public bartering process, losing your best player, your top striker, Fitzpatrick. Was that ever considered? Could that have been maybe a deal? Because not only are they lacking skill, ability, and experience, they're just lacking bodies up top as well.
Yeah, I mean, we were having a conversation during the Dungannon Linfield game at the weekend, just among different people. And there was almost a feeling among people that, looking from the outside in, now this is just an observation because we don't know, we're not privy to what happens at Mournview Park or anything of that nature. But there seemed to be a sense from people that maybe things had just gone a bit stale at Glenavon for whatever reason. You know, I mean, I'm not advocating a change of manager or anything of that nature. It's not my position to do so. But it was noted by certain people that there just seemed to be a bit of a feeling of stagnation, or a bit of a feeling of apathy. Somebody was saying that the home crowds weren't great towards the end of last year. Certainly the two results to date at the start of the new campaign is not going to probably attract too many more new faces in, and it just seems to be a bit of a malaise there where things just aren't right for whatever reason. Maybe they haven't got the players, maybe they can't get the players. I don't know what's the problem there. But you mentioned Dungannon, there's a certain spirit there. Loch Gall, you can see it's evident there as well, albeit early days. And Corian have, I suppose, moved on, and there's a sense of excitement we mentioned at the top of the show there. And you would kind of just wonder, you know, what it's going to take at Glenavon, or how how and what can they do just to try to just give themselves a bit of a lift and try to sort of inject some belief, confidence, whatever you want to call it, into the season? Because, Peter, the danger is you lose your opening two games and maybe the mood isn't great. You don't maybe have the players and the squad there that you can compete. And you don't want it to be in a situation where that goes on for too long, because all of a sudden you may find yourself, for example, getting cut adrift. You know, you've got no points. There's obviously two other teams with no points too. But you do need to get that first win on the board as quickly as possible, just to give you that self-belief within the group, the management, the supporters and everything else. And the longer that you go on not getting a result, then that just hits the confidence even more, and it just becomes a real hard place. We've all supported teams and we all know how it works. We've all, you know, had clubs of our own that's happened too. But having said that, you know, Glenavon's one of those teams, and Gary Hamilton's the type of manager that they have been in this situation, similar situations before, and they have turned it around, and somehow they've changed the course of their season. So there's no reason why they probably can't do it again. So, I mean, things aren't good at the minute, but who knows? It can change in a heartbeat. But one good result, Peter, changes everything, as we know.
And no one encapsulates one good result changing the feeling altogether quite like Newry City this week. They were just down in the dumps. They opened the season against the new boys at home, and very similar to Glenavon, it was over within half an hour or so. By the first half, they were completely up against it. And I know, and I'm sure, that Gary Boyle was looking for a big reaction from his players. And boy, did they get it. They go down to Taylor's Avenue against a Carrick Rangers team who have just been firing on all cylinders pre-season. They're knocking them in, free-flowing, got all these strikers trying to fit them in. And they just sucker-punched them early. And it was such an intriguing game, this, because Carrick Rangers just looked completely baffled and befuddled that they were somehow one goal down, and then there were two goals down, and then they were up against it to try and not only get a win, but just to get any result against this team. And then early in the second half, Newry City go down to 10 men when Adam Carroll is sent off for a lunge in the middle of the park. And you're thinking, here we go again. Newry City put themselves in a good position. And then with all the players, Ben Tilney coming from deep, they are just going to flood men forward. And they did. They threw so many balls into the box. It was like you were accidentally watching the feed skip or something. You're just going, I think I've seen this ball being played in about four times in a row. Newry stood resolute. And there was some great individual moments from Stephen Maguire doing things we've seen him do before, making diving saves and all the rest. And Carrick Rangers will be, and they are absolutely kicking themselves. But let's give Newry City credit. They went into a team who a lot of people were feeling good about. They got the early goals and they stood up to the challenge. In many ways, they did something very similar last season when they got a red card against Carrick. Maybe they're just Carrick's bogey team. But Gary Boyle really wanted to get the first win of his managerial career in the hot seat of Newry. He wanted it early. And what a response to last weekend's defeat.
I mean, that was the shock result of the weekend. I mean, nobody would have seen that one coming whatsoever. Newry, as you said, beaten last week, probably written off in a lot of quarters. You know, you lose at home to the new promoted team. It's a horrific start. You go to Carrick Rangers. Stewartie King has been given license to go and buy players in the summer. They've recruited really well, arguably probably one of Carrick Rangers' strongest ever squads on paper. So it certainly made me sit up and take notice, as did a lot of other people, just wondering exactly how it happened. But you described it perfectly, Peter, there. Newry went, did what they had to do, got the goals, defended heroically when they had to, and got away with the 3 points, leaving Carrick Rangers and Stewartie King not best pleased, and I'm not best pleased. Happy Stuart King is not a good person to see around. I
thought it was going to be an absolute classic of the genre before he stepped out and he gave his assumption. He's not happy about an issue that led to Ben Cushley being subbed off at halftime. He claims that Cushley got either an arm or a head to the nose, and he has a, I don't know what a badly broken nose is, but a broken nose is a broken nose, and if that's what it is, I'm sure it's not good. I look forward to Ben Cushing maybe wearing some sort of Phantom of the Opera mask for the rest of the season to try and get himself on the pitch. But look, Stuart King was absolutely fuming. He's talked about before, he's probably seen this Newry City team more than any other neutral in the league. I believe he lives close to the area, so he should know how to set his team up. And he described Newry City as doing one or getting one over on Carrick, and that doesn't give enough credit to Newry. They went forward, they took their chances really, really well, and that's one thing Carrick did not do. If you were to look at the full feed of the match, you would just see chance after chance after chance. Look at all the strikers they have: Michaelitis, Curtis Allen, and McGuckin can score a goal. They've got Perkis up top there, Ben Tilney, you know, Andy Mitchell can do something from deep, but way too many times was it just languishing balls going up in the middle, trying a snapshot from outside the box. I think these games will come for sure for Carrick, but a team that will have ambitions to maybe be a dark horse for the top six, this is very disappointing, very, very difficult. But let's say it right here. This is a big 3 points for Newry.
Yeah.
Because this is 3 points against a Carrick Rangers team. And now other teams, whoever they might be, we don't know yet, who will shake out that could be near the bottom, they're going to have to get a similar result. And I don't think it's going to be a happy hunting ground for a lot of those teams near the bottom. So they get the result, credit to them. And what they proved actually, Newry, is that they do have the fight, they do have the determination, and they do have that solidarity, which really paid dividends for them in big spots last season. We all know the odd meltdown, that 4-3 against Portadown, but they've always been able to stand tall and put themselves about, and that's a real good marker for Newry. I feel like this is a game where they will point to and say, this is what we need again and again and again.
And they always have the ability to unearth talented players too. If you all go back through even the last couple of seasons, they always have an ability to produce some really talented footballers. Some of them move on to other clubs, bigger clubs, if you like. But they do have a knack of unearthing. And I suppose given where they are geographically, I suppose that can work in their favour. I mean, they're in an area probably where they are the only senior club, really. So they have a pick of players from like both sides of the border, just from that Newry Dundalk area. And that does help. They can unearth gems of players that maybe other clubs aren't aware of, maybe eventually lose them. But if they do the job for Newry at the time that they're there, then so be it. But no, as you say, I think all the credit on this occasion has to go to Newry. I was reading some comments from Carrick Rangers fans, and they were kind of echoing, Peter, what you were saying. Maybe it was because they went behind, and there's a certain sense of panic sets in, and then you try to force the issue. But they were saying that Carrick played a lot of long balls. There wasn't a lot of football, if you like, play. But I guess that comes from conceding a couple of goals. The tendency as a footballer is that you just panic and you try to get the ball in the box, and you forget about maybe the things that you've been doing in training or the match plan. You just want to try and get a goal back as quickly as you can. But a lot of Carrick fans were sort of saying or observing that maybe they went long ball too quickly, and it'll be interesting now to see when Carrick play the next time just what way they'll approach the game and how they do it, because they'll obviously have learned quite a bit from Newry City defeat.
It's funny, isn't it, because how many times have we seen our own team up against it, they're chasing a goal, they try and do something silly on the ball, and they get tackled up in the final third of the pitch, and you're just like, oh, just hit the ball, just get the ball in, you know, and all of a sudden when they do put it in, it's like, oh, do something with the ball. It's just the follies of football. But we've got one more game to cover It was on Friday night. It was the final selection of our little trio of 2-1 wins away. Jim Irvine is still seeking his first win as a manager, but I don't think many people thought it was going to come with Crusaders coming in the town, after being just so close from getting a very famous European victory over against Rosenborg. This is a team who people have been talking about as dark horses for the title. I went one further and said that they're going to have a real challenge. I think they're going to go do it. And what a fantastic performance this was. In many ways, it should have been a lot more goals than was sitting there on the score sheet. This Crusaders side have changed their shape ever so slightly. You can do that when you have a real dynamo like Ben Kennedy in the centre of the pitch just pulling strings. He just suits this Crusader system so, so well. Another difficult day at the office for Ballymena. I thought, if you look back at both the goals that actually, well, the goals that went in, the goals for Crusaders, I thought the defending was borderline atrocious from their positioning. That's something that's going to need a lot of work for Ballymena. But I feel as though for Crusaders, it was job done, on to the next one. And we can all look back and go, what a great bit of recruitment they did. Because like Ben Kennedy is a player they've had for a while, but they built from deep. And Jimmy Calgar looks like this little maestro at the back, all of a sudden spraying balls out wide, looking confident, pushing off attackers as he looks up and he sees Heatley going down one wing, maybe Forsyth or Thielen on the other. This is a very exciting team they've built North Belfast.
Yeah, and Peter, do you know what? They've been very, very quiet Crusaders, and not many people have, I haven't heard a lot of talk about Crusaders. A lot of talk about other clubs and doing this and doing that. Stephen Baxter went, did his business in the summer very early, knew what he wanted, targeted particular specific players, how he was going to play. He had them in the door early in the summer, bedded them in, got them used to pre-season. The squad that they have, they had a good squad to begin with. They've added that extra bit of quality this year. They've been very, very quiet, quietly gone about their business. Crusaders would be a team like yourself that I suspect will be up there at the business end of the season, come the end of the season. Isn't it incredible too, when you think like Stephen Baxter, how long he has been in charge and how many different squads and teams he has constructed in that period of time that he's been in charge at Seaview. It's incredible. It's almost like a Fergie situation where he can build a team, then almost dismantle it, build another team, and just keep going. It's incredible.
Maybe because they're playing similar-esque formations at the minute. One thing I will say for Stephen Baxter, and also as well for Oran Kearney right now here, is that they would be considered, you know, Irish League through and through, somewhat New Age traditional perhaps, just for their longevity with their clubs. Crusaders are playing three at the back, five, maybe two, three up. Like they are, this is a different formation. Not exactly in the same way that Cole Rain are setting themselves up, but clearly he's seeing new ways of playing. It's not a complete left or right turn, but it's a tweak. It would be easy to just go for 4-3-3 and I'm just going to constantly try and recreate Jordan Owens, try and, you know, recreate. There's a little bit of that. James Thielen feels like Paul Heatley, the air there. So he knows the type of players, but he is just able to be so effective with them. And I think that's why they've been so successful. One, at home, and two, in the big games. Many times, Crusaders were the team that was just making it difficult for the teams there. They're getting a win against Linfield. They're getting a draw against Thorn. It was like the odd result at the bottom, which is what you're referring to with Corrine. It's getting off to a good start and it's trying to avoid mistakes, trying to avoid dropping points. Talked about a few weeks ago about filling your cup, trying to get to the same position. You need to do the same thing you did in the season past and then progress. So the standstill need to be beating Ballymena away. But I thought they looked incredibly assured. There will be tougher tests, absolutely for sure. But I thought they dealt with this very, very calmly. But shifting to Ballymena, This is a team who look light on bodies, look light on players, perhaps at the top end of the pitch. We're already seeing injuries with Gawn, who got injured the first game of the season. There's now talk that Sean Graham might be in the eye of Cliftonville to snatch away at the back, an area of the pitch which hasn't particularly been a strong point for them in 2023. Jim Irvin knew he had a big job on his hands. And similar to Glenavon, they've played against two top six sides from last year. This is a team that needed a lot of work. They do not have the time to let these early games drift, because we saw last season Portadown seemed to not get their first win until like October. I'm not saying that's what Balmaina are going to do, but the longer this goes on, the longer where you're not looking competitive, you're just trying to hang on, fear will settle in. And I think Jim Irvin has one of the toughest jobs in the league right now, trying to get this team together. I thought they've done okay, bar some significant mistakes. Like, it hasn't looked complete disaster ball, bar in random parts. But this is an uphill battle, I think, for Balmaina this season.
I think I know what you're saying there as well. Like, they just maybe lacking a little bit of quality, a little bit of strength and depth, I think, as well. I mean, they come down to Corian on the opening night. And for the first quarter of the game, they performed really, really well, made life very difficult for Corian. Corian struggled to find the rhythm, but once Corian did get their tempo and the rhythm, there really was only going to be one winner at that particular occasion. And it's just hard, as you say, it's Jim Irvin's first job. He would have known the enormity of the job facing him when he accepted the job. But it's difficult. They don't have the players. It's Jim learning on the job as a manager as well, which is hard. It's hard enough for an experienced manager to probably go into a club such as Balmaina at this present moment. But for a manager to be learning on the job, doing that, what Jim will bring, that will to win, that sort of defiance, you know, that he spoke about it after the Korean game, and he'll bring that in spades. But whether that's going to be enough to help them where they want to get to, I'm not sure. I'm just looking at their next couple of games. If you're a Balmaina supporter, you're looking going Larne, Linfield. You know, it doesn't get any better anytime soon, Peter. And as you pointed out, you know, Portadown got off to a poor start. Didn't really recover, did have a little bit of a comeback towards the latter end of the season, but a little bit too late. But, you know, Balmaina played two, lost two, your next two are Larne and Linfield. You know, you're looking at a scenario, maybe you've played four, lost four. It's difficult times for Balmaina, and you don't want to see any club struggling, and particularly your derby rivals too, you know, because you like the competitiveness in the derby rivals, don't you?
We'll get on to Tuesday night's fixtures and our predictions in a second, but we'll spend a little time talk through the news. The first bit of news coming through is that we have brand new under-21s and under-19s manager for the Northern Ireland sides. It's Tommy Wright taking over the under-21s and Gareth McCauley under-19s. That's a pretty decent capture for the AFA to get Tommy Wright in there. Look, he's been out of management for a bit of a while, but his last job was in the top flight of Scottish football, so he will have a lot of experience to bring and to give to those players. So that's an interesting coup there. And then for Gareth McCauley, clearly one of the earlier jobs in his career, now that his playing days are over, and I'm sure he'll bring a lot of vitality and be able to bring a lot of experience to these players. And this is a player who was playing top end Premier League football, was playing in the Euros. I'm sure a lot of these young players will think, oh my goodness, that's Gareth McCauley, the player that I just idolized and watched on TV only a couple of years ago. And I think these are some really strong appointments.
Yeah, and Gareth, a really down to earth fella as well. And I remember Gareth was at Corian and he was part-time and he voluntarily gave up his job. I think he worked as a draftsman at the time. Packed in the job to concentrate on just training and his own time, playing part-time with Corian, because at that stage, he wanted to be a full-time professional footballer. That was a hell of a risk, jacking in your full-time job to go and train on your own and play part-time with Corrine, but it paid off for him because he had the determination and the skill to do it. And he can then empathize with the young guys that are going to be in under his control and his charge, like 18, 19-year-old kids looking to pursue a full-time career. And he's been there and he knows it and he knows what it takes. And then when he did get his opportunity, he went to Lincoln from Corrine all those years ago, and he just went up the leagues, just bit by bit by bit, and look where he ended up. So he has all the experience and all the advice that any young footballer will ever, ever need. And Tommy Wright would be very, very similar. And I heard Tommy Wright's interview in the BBC this evening, and he mentioned that he has known Michael O'Neill for 20, 30 years, and they are very close friends. And it's like a team of managers. So Gareth, Tommy and Michael will all communicate, work together, talk through what players are coming through, and Tommy and Gareth will give Michael advice. And to me, from the outside looking in, that seems like a sensible way to go.
Exciting. Looking forward to see what fruits will come from their labour. I cannot have someone that follows said club so much without diving into what was a big story a couple of weeks ago. I know you might not have any more information that we already know that's out there, but even just give us your reaction. What's your feelers? The talk was before the season that there may be money men sniffing around Corrine, tune of millions of pounds that could be invested in the club. I think there's a long way to go. Friends of Corrine will have a big say on this, but where are we with it? What does it look like? Is it just paper talk? Has there been discussions? And what could it mean to the club in the area?
Yeah, well, I'll start by saying that there is a meeting taking place this Thursday night. Extraordinary general or an extraordinary meeting of the Friends of Corrine, at which they will be given more details. Any proposed takeover or change of management structure, whatever way you want to put it. I know that a couple of potential investors or representatives of investors were at a game or two last season, towards the end of last season. And there are people, their connections with Corrine, went to school in Corrine, some of these people. So from one point of view, it's not like some random investment, I suppose, if you like, somebody's just picked Corrine out of a hat and suddenly went, yeah, we'll invest money in there. There is a link between the potential investors and the town, the community, and of course then the football club. The investment, if my personal opinion, because you know, you asked me and everybody has to have an opinion. My opinion, for what it is worth, is if there is an investment there, and if it's, as I say, people with links to the town and they have an interest and a genuine interest in the well-being of the area, not dissimilar, I suppose, to a Kenny Bruce, for example. If there was money there and if the structures could be agreed so that the Friends still have some input into the running of the club as well as potential new investors, I think it would be remiss of people within the club not to take a really good look at it, because the way that the Irish League's gone, Peter, and you know as well as I do, you know, you only have to look at the clubs. You look at your Larns, Glentoran, Linfield Crusaders, full-time investment players, and invariably they're going to be the ones that are going to be challenging for trophies year on year. More so down 5-10 years, that situation is going to get even more acute. So if there's a potential there, and I'm sure discussions have taken place, I don't know for sure, but you know, these things aren't going to happen without some sort of chat with current chairman Colm McKendry, even the manager Oran Kearney. They're all going to be kept in some form of a loop, you know, to know what's going on. For me personally, it could be done. Why wouldn't you accept some sort of investment? What's the alternative?
What's really interesting about this is that when we look at what's happened in the league, where we've seen takeovers at Glentoran, which shepherd them into full-time football, Lorne might not even be a top-flight team without the investment from Kenny Bruce. It's becoming a bit more normalised. And with those two examples, maybe some people will forget that there were significant concerns, which haven't really gone away with anybody that's coming into any club. You just need to look at what happens up and down the English pyramid. I watched a video about Bury FC, Gig Lane, a ground I was at during my uni days in Manchester, and that it was a big club in the Football League, which is now like maybe 5-6 seasons away from maybe even the Conference, you know. And they were pulling in 5,000 at the weekend there, I believe, you know. And we've also seen in the League of Ireland, teams go bust, teams have their own difficulty with owners. So it's not like every single person who comes in with cash, there's been a happy ending at the end of it. Here's one thing I'll say about Coleraine, which is interesting for me, is that Kenny Bruce obviously highlights the ability to reinvigorate, activate lapsed fans in the town of Larne and the surrounding areas, and look, that they are having really good fan bases coming in. He's growing a culture around the Friday nights. Coleraine as a club, well, first off, let's also not forget the guts of 20 years ago where Coleraine were on the brink themselves, and they're in a brilliant position right now where they are fighting near the top of the league. They feel really solvent. They're getting huge numbers through the turnstiles. They have activated a fan base round there. But I actually do think when it comes to potential, Coleraine have a lot of it. They have that great pitch. They've got a ground which feels a bit more modern compared to other places. Yes, it could do with a bit more work. What ground couldn't? But there's a lot of structures that are there. You're drawing people in. You're doing well. You've got a good squad there. But I think as a catchment area, Coleraine's catchment area is huge. You do not have any big team for a wide berth until you start getting into, yes, you have the Limavadis and all the rest, but you know, you have a wide berth there. And I know there's a connection to America. You know, you think of the Wrexham thing. What's to say the whole Port Rush connection, you know, Golf Links FC, you know, Coleraine. Like, there is something to be said for the area, for the story. There's a brilliant narrative about Coleraine. It's not exactly the kind of Fighting Irish Notre Dame kind of brand, but there could be a great brand which can grow outside. I know it sounds ridiculous to talk about beyond our shores. You know, you never know the way of virality and the way the internet works.
Well, you just never know.
You just never know. But this, it's an interesting proposition. Until it happens, we just don't know. But it would be potentially revolutionary for the club, I imagine, if the figures that are being banded about were to come in. And I think there's a lot of discussions clearly to go.
Yeah, I mean, a lot depends. As I said, supporters have their say. And ultimately, Peter, I guess it's up to the friends of Coleraine, who effectively own Coleraine Football Club. The decision effectively rests with them. I'm just an observer. But as you say, they won't do anything. Nobody will do anything if it doesn't feel right. And I think that's probably the bottom line. If you think something's not right for you, then you will walk away. But potentially, if investors can come in, can help improve the situation. But, you know, oh, it's one of those ones, Peter, isn't it? You just don't know, do you?
You've been there. You know, it's so, the Coleraine thing's just such a unique thing because you guys have been there. You've looked over the edge. You've seen oblivion and you've come back from it, which is so scary. You know, that's the thing about it. Like, I know nothing about these investors realistically, but what I and other people have read. So I know everybody else listening this wants me to ask a question. What does your gut say? If the answer is you don't know, that's fair enough. But I have to ask the question. Do you think it's going to happen? And what are potentially the big hang-ups?
Well, that's a good question. It depends. It depends. It depends. As I said to you, there's meetings with the supporters. They have to be convinced, first and foremost, without them coming on board. Do you know what? My gut. You ask me for my gut?
Yes.
I think it'll happen.
Wow. Just because of
In some shape or form, no.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And do you think that's because, like, what's your feeling? You know, you've been in there first game of the season. The news broke before that game, first game of the season against Ballymena. Is there a feeling within fans that perhaps they are quote-unquote local lads, which makes everybody feel a bit warm and fuzzy inside after the Kenny Bruce experience? Is there just a feeling within fans, just roll the dice? Because the gap could be widening.
I don't know if it's warm and fuzzy as such, but it's like, if you know the guys are from here as a supporter.
It's an easier sell.
Yeah, as a supporter,
than,
you think to yourself, well, these guys kind of come from here, so you can't mess us about kind of things. You know what I mean? There's that element to it. Because they know the particulars of Corey and that you mentioned where it is, the locality, the potential of it. So that, I think, helps assuage some doubts that people may have. Obviously, people still have to be convinced. You'd love to be a fly on the wall at the meeting on Thursday just to hear what's being said. You asked me for my gut. I think at some point it's going to happen in some shape or form or another. That's just me. I mean, that's me personal opinion. That's what I think will happen. I could be completely wide of the mark. But anyway, I'm putting it out there on the record.
Exciting. Exciting, I'm sure. Well, it's exciting for Korean fans and people from the area. Perhaps other teams will think, no, stop bustling in on our on our area of the play part, please. So look, I
hopefully we get new Wi-Fi out of it.
Well, I think this is a story that will run and run and run, and we'll get plenty of airtime over this podcast over the weeks and months. So thank you for giving us a wee insight into that. But let's look ahead to things that are definitely going to happen, and these may already be done by the time you listen to this podcast, but these Tuesday night fixtures are tricky. And let's go with the homer. Let's go for your game. You go down to Taylor's Avenue, and you're about to face off against a wounded yet angry puppy. They have all the I would argue that this is a team that has the most amount of attacking threat that you've faced so far. Can you handle it? This has been a happy hunting ground for you, particularly last season. Will it be again? And as a complete little spanner in the works before you get into what your thoughts are, will Shevin be back because a boy's got to sort out his fantasy team?
We had a decent enough record up Taylor's Avenue last year, and God knows we were up there plenty of times. But in each occasion,
hold on. Minor point. I don't think you're allowed to call Taylor's Avenue up there. What way are you looking at the map? Surely it's down. Not to get pedantic, but everything has to be down for Coleraine. Surely.
I love that. Getting picked up on that.
Anyway, so you were talking about you
over,
go
over
you,
over.
That's that. You know what? The jury will accept over. Okay, so when you went over to Taylor's Avenue, continue.
Yes, we never got it easy. Even though we did get some positive results last year, we were fortunate on a number of occasions to get away with the results that we did. And as you say, Carrick Rangers are going to be sitting there over the last couple of days waiting for Tuesday to come around to try and banish the demons from the weekend. And they have a smattering of former Korean players amongst their ranks too. You mentioned the strikers earlier. Nettis, Michaelides, Emmett, Curtis. You know what I mean? It's like a Korean old boys there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just get a phone call. I have Lauren fans saying you have some cheek.
I was going to say, we're now called Lauren Old Boys.
And then Lauren is Cliftonville Old Boys.
We just took out the tech bit, you know, the Lauren Tech Old Boys. We just called ourselves Lauren Old Boys. I think we had six former Lauren players in our team the other day, which is more than half of our team. So there you go. But anyway, so Corian against Carrick Rangers. You asked me about Chevy, because Chevy, Matthew Shevlin, and Stephen O'Donnell both missed lock all game. Both were carrying slight knocks, according to Oran Kearney. I think he'd be hopeful that maybe one or both will be back for Tuesday, Peter. So if you have Chevy in your team, I would say keep him in there.
Well,
keep him in there.
He's out already. I saw the team sheet come out at whatever it was. I remember to check it at like, whatever, yes, it was 25-2, and I saw he was out completely, and I just ran digitally. I was on a train. I was like, get him out, stick somebody else in. I was able to do it, which after Friday night for like maybe a few hours, I was number one I was number one in the country on the NFL.
Hope
one.
You took a screenshot.
I absolutely did. I tweeted about it as I absolutely would. I'm now 10th again, but I'm still number one in the Waffle Listeners League and the Kick and Match Listeners League. So very you can good. All chase my tail as I make further mistakes. I always start good and then I fall apart because I overthink it. But you can join that league if you do have a team. Kicking Match is the code. I got to go for this game. I do think Carrick Rangers will come back, but I just really believe in this free-flowing nine players that you have attacking at all times. You will get caught surely for a goal, but I think this is 3-1 Corian.
Oh, very good. Very good. I would take that. Do you want me to give you a score as well?
Ack, if you want to, sure. You can scud yourself if you want.
I'll go 2-1 for Corian then. Same we're going the Corian. Seeing as a Corian loving tonight on the Kicking Match podcast.
Crusaders, a team that has been getting a lot of love in this podcast recently, go to Dungannon, a team who everybody's having a bit of love in now. Can Dungannon finally get a scalp? They had two missed opportunities. I guess a draw is half a scalp. I must say, going down to Seaview is a bit different. It's a bit like those little, I don't know, like ninja things, like, you know, jumping on the little small little pads, swinging from the hoops. That's all good. Crusaders is like the lake. Going down to Seaview is like the lake with crocodiles and fire rings that you have to jump through. All I'm saying to you, Dungannon Swifts, is good luck.
Crusaders, formidable at Seaview, aren't they? As everybody knows. I can only say Crusaders win there, Peter. Possibly 3-1 to Crusaders.
That's exactly what I thought. Ben Gallagher keeps up his scoring streak, but I think they'll get the goals. It just depends if they get them early. That'll be the thing for Dungannon. If they can hold Crusaders off for a long period, anything can happen. And I think Crusaders will want to start that game sharp and fast and get the goals. And I think they will.
I think they will.
A team who has been starting their games very, very well is Loch Awe. They have Glentoran coming down. And this is a tricky one. It's on TV, which I'm really looking forward to watching. And this is another game where the longer it goes on, the sooner Glentoran gets the goal, it will just impact how the game is played. Because 70 minutes in, 0-0, Glentoran frustrated once again. Feeney's going to have to try and start tinkering away. I don't know if Loch Awe is built particularly just to hang on and sit back and play it tight. We'll have to see. It's a different kind of game. We haven't seen them have to do that yet this season. And I do like Loch Awe. I'm a big fan, but I think it might just be... This feels similar to this game where Glentoran went to Stanmore Park quite early in the season on a Tuesday night where they get a penalty and they sneak a win even though it could have all went quite poorly. I'm thinking a penalty to Glentoran might be what gives him the 3 points here.
To me, it'll be something like that, or it'll be an individual piece of skill from one of their bigger players, or you're a Niall McGinn or a Jay Donnelly, that maybe make the difference. Loch Awe in the second half against Corian. I actually had Corian paying back for the majority of that second half. Took the game to Corian. Garth Dean, a couple of routine saves he had to make. Yes, fair enough. If Loch Awe score early and the longer it goes on, for example, if Loch Awe are leading, then it's like what you're saying, a little bit of panic within Glentoran. But you've got to look at Glentoran with the players they have, Jay Donnelly and Shay McCartan and Niall McGinn, and at least one of them will come up with something that maybe will be enough.
As much as they didn't spread about particularly well on the big pitch of the Oval, the tight pitch doesn't help them particularly a lot. It doesn't give a whole lot of fairway for Dara O'Connor to just pin back the ears and go into. So if they can just make that pitch compact, anything can happen. But I feel as though Glentoran will get the win. I'm going to go for a handy 1-0 to them. Cliftonville, can they keep this good fun time Jim Magilton train on the tracks? If it is going to keep bumping, it's going to have to go through the Newry showgrounds and come back again. Newry will be feeling like, hey, we've got a bit of their confidence back. A big old Joe Gormley goal early could put an end to that. This is a strange one, and I know I'm probably going to be bigging up Newry here, but I think Cliftonville will get a win here as well. Great start for Jim Magilton if it all comes through.
Newry is a difficult place to go, and an evening game down in Newry showgrounds is difficult as well, but you've got to look at the two squads and the players that they have available, and Joe Gormley starting off in the manner that he did, his tail's up already. You got to look at Cliftonville win there. I think Newry will do well, but Cliftonville to win that one, maybe 2-1, Peter, would be my thinking on that.
I think this could be the introduction to Ben Wilson, all his skills. I think 3-0, maybe 2 for him, keeping himself feeling good. But once again, if Newry can, very similar to Carrick, if they can get them on the counter, which they can do, and sneak a goal, I think Cliftonville could panic. We need to see what Cliftonville do once they're up against it. But I do think they'll have plenty of attacking players. And look, that Newry Showgrounds pitch should be holding up at this time of the season, which should benefit the style of play for Cliftonville. Linfield host Glenavon. Glenavon, Dungannon and Ballymena have just had the hardest starts of the season they could possibly have. They gave Linfield a good going, if I remember, on a Tuesday night last season up at Windsor Park. It would be a monumental surprise if they did something similar this time round.
It would be, given all that we've talked about Glenavon and Linfield in this podcast. But you, Peter, you and I, we both know football, and strange things happen. And you know, Linfield should win that quite comfortably at home against a team out of form, without a win. You would expect them to win comfortably. But would it surprise you if somehow Glenavon got a result out of it? Probably not.
Well, Gary always seemed to bounce back from what looked like an abject performance, and that's what it was up at Solitude last week. The difference this season is they just don't have a Fitzpatrick to do something up top, or even a Micheál Glynn, which they have for the first half of the season, to just blitz his way through a midfield of Linfield. Perhaps missing Finlayson will be a key factor, and that's the little airy little thing that they'll be scratching at and try and get a gap in. But I have to admit, I think that's going to be a handy two, probably more nil for Linfield. Goals are something Glenavon just haven't got this season. And then finally, what's the name of this derby? The Lauren Ballymena one? There's some weird name for it.
Is it the Mid and East Antrim or something, is it? Is that what they call it?
That's way too official. I have to find it. I'm going to have to find a banter
name. That's it. Name, but maybe
that's it. I'm going to put it out there. Usually there's a poll on this podcast, but if you're listening here, you're obviously dedicated. I want you to write in, if I get something in there, I want you to write in what's the new name for the Lauren Ballymena derby, and we'll forever call it that until we find a better one. Ballymena go to Lauren. Something about this says that could this be like a surprise result out of nowhere? I don't think so, but probably not though. I'll say this, Niffle put up a video and then they were talking to a few Glentoran fans, and one of the questions that came up was, who's the best player in the league? And clearly that's somewhat come through the fact that we've lost who was the best player in the league, Conor McManaman.
Yeah, I
think that right now there's an argument for a few other players. My personal view that it's Ben Kennedy, and we'll see that as the weeks go on. But Lee Bonus, he's considered this player who just gets goals, but I think he does so much more, and I think he could boss this Ballymena back line, which will be without Colin Coates. So it's a severely weakened back line, a back line that was already missing bodies.
You can't see past the Lauren win.
You can't.
As you say, Ballymena without Colin Coates, I mean, Jim Mervyn admitted after the first game down at Corain that, you know, that he had identified areas where he felt Ballymena needed to strengthen, and they identified players, and Colin Coates was that player to help shore up the defence. As you say, he's not there tomorrow night. You're facing arguably one of the top strike pairings and Lee Bonus and Andy Ryan. So, yeah, I'm afraid good luck with that, Ballymena.
Yeah, I think it could be case of how many. It just depends how absolutely clinical Lauren are. So that's the games. We'll see the next time I get chatting to you fine folks listening to the podcast. But Damien, I absolutely love this week. I love you sharing all your experience, all your crack as well. It was really good to get into that Coleraine story. Can I ask, is the Coleraine podcast back for another year?
Yes, it is. We're back. We had our first one last week. We had Davey McDaid on. We just thought we'd get him on, seeing it took him 10 years between stints at Corian, you know. I don't think Johnny McNabb ever forgave him for leaving in the first place, but he relapsed and we brought him on, and we have new sponsors this year in the form of the Lodge Hotel in Corian. I'm sure plenty of your listeners and supporters of various clubs will know the Lodge very well, en route to the showgrounds and match days as well. So yeah, up and running, new sponsors, same pair of agents running it, but apart from that, yeah, all good, and things are good at the moment. 2 wins out of 2, Peter, sure. Life doesn't get any better, does it?
It could get better if you get a result down in Carrick, or it could completely go crushing. We'll just have
imagine,
to see.
Imagine sitting on 9 points after 3 games.
I want some photograph of you punching the air in delight, absolutely losing the run of yourself, if that's the case, that you're sitting there. Top of the table, 3 wins. We'll have to see. Well, I remember this hype train for Coleraine last year, very similar. So,
oh, listen. We've been down this road.
We have indeed. We have indeed.
But we're well chastened in it as well. You know what I mean? That's why nobody will ever get carried away down here, because we've been down this road before, and we know that means nothing. If we're still in and around there come February, March time, then we'll talk, Peter.
Fantastic. And if you ever chat to these owners, just let them know why can be bought. So, you know, if we need a third paid chair on this Coleraine podcast, I'm there, my friend.
Get you back to the back of the queue.
I'm a shill.
I'll put a good word in for
good
you.
Good man. Good man. Damien, an absolute pleasure. I look forward to hopefully having you back sometime. As the season goes on, I look forward to making my way, my first game this season up at the showgrounds very, very soon. Go check out the Coleraine podcast. Where can people find you online, on Twitter, wherever else?
Yes, all the usual places, Anchor, Spotify, all the usual places where you get your download your podcast. So yeah, more than welcome. It'll be Coleraine centric, but hey ho, can't have everything. And we're not like you, Peter. We don't go the full gamut of the Irish League, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, that's just my own cross to bear. And it is at Damien Mullen 2 on Twitter.
Lovely.
Good stuff.
Very good. Peter, thank you very much for your kind invitation. Lovely to have a good chat with you. And as you say, get yourself up to the Corian showground soon. We'll see you there.
I look forward to being considered your scud. Cheerio.
Yeah. Thanks, Peter.
One week, I will go into it thinking this might be a wee bit of a shorty episode, and one week, it might actually happen. I know if you're listening to this, you're not complaining. You've filled in a little bit more of your day, your journey, or something like that with more chat and more action, and wasn't it good chat? Damien is so chilled, he's so knowledgeable, he's been there, he's done that, he's such good crack, and I really enjoyed chatting to them. I kind of got lost just having a natter talking about all these games, and it was absolutely brilliant. And if you enjoyed that and you want updates on this podcast as I chat to other fun and cool individuals just like Damien, you know how to do that. You can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. All you gotta do is just search for Kicking Match, all one word. If you want to go to your smart speaker and say, hey smart speaker, whatever you call it, do you know you can get it in Irish accent now? Do you know you can get some smart speakers and it sounds like the usual smart speaker, but they just have a little lilt, they have a little Irish lilt where you're like, why do they sound like, okay, anyway, that's true. If you have one of them, you'll not have them doing the podcast. It'll just be me. You're probably there already. So yeah, just ask them, hey, please play a Kicking Match, an Irish League podcast. That an Irish League podcast bit is a tiny bit important. And if you're listening to this on whatever platform that you enjoy, you know you can subscribe or follow. I've been getting lots of new people on the platforms that I can find the followers. So if you did follow recently, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It's a great way to get you to have the notifications to say, hey, he's finally uploaded the podcast, because I'm going to be a wee bit erratic about doing it. But hey, look at me. I got it in nice and early. Enjoy the games. Enjoy Tuesday night games. Enjoy Saturday if I don't get another one up before then. It probably won't see you till next time. But hey, thanks for listening. All the best. Buenos dias, I think. Bye.